Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the craziness that is the Inside Scoop right here at the Take Back America convention. I am sitting here in a chair, still warmed by Guy James. It's very strange to begin a radio show this way, but heck, that's what this is all about. This is amazing. I am surrounded by chaos. As Guy mentioned, they are setting up some kind of forum, some kind of party, some kind of reception, who knows, right in front of me. I said to him, I think it's to honor the great work of the Head On Radio Network. I'm not quite sure that's true, but heck, you know, if you believe it, anything can happen, right? I've got a very interesting set of guests for you today. My first guest is Josh Silver, and we're going to talk about the media. And, you know how terrible it is for progressive media. Well, he'll give us some of the statistics, and we'll give us some of the details here and figure out how that's going to work. And then later on in the hour, I've got Rob Call of Op-Ed News. But there's all kinds of craziness going on here. I mean, this is the kind of place where I may just grab someone and bring them in. And folks, if you want to call in at 877-4-HEAD-ON and you want to talk to some of these people, bring it on. Bring it on. It's sort of a freewheeling show. Josh Silver, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks, Mark. Good to be here.
Now, Josh, I don't even know you, and you were giving me heck, you know, all day today. I don't know why that was, but
heck wasn't the word you used before we were over
no,
the air.
No, but see, air, there's only certain things I can say.
Yeah.
Who the heck are you, and what do you know about the media?
Well, I'm the executive director of an organization called Free Press. We're nonpartisan, and we are the guys who, every time, and this happens all the time, the largest media conglomerates, the biggest companies, come into Washington and lobby to allow themselves to get even bigger and buy up more radio, more TV, more newspapers. I'm the guy who says no.
Hey, I get your emails. I know who you are.
Exactly.
It's always FCC Chairman Kevin Martin does something terrible. I get a new headline. I mean,
exactly.
That's what they all say all the time.
And we also work on the internet, and we try to make sure that the internet's affordable. It's neutral. And you can do anything you want on it. We have a crisis with the media. We don't have enough hard-hitting critical journalism. We don't have enough local independent voices in the media. We don't have enough minority ownership. We don't have enough women owning radio and TV stations. Our media is a mess, and our democracy is suffering. Every time the biggest large media companies come into Washington and try to allow themselves to get even bigger through government policy, our organization is the one that says no and rallies public opposition. We saw 3 million people say no to media consolidation in 2003. We see it's not just a progressive or liberal issue. We see conservatives. We saw both in Congress, in the FCC, and even at the grassroots, organizations like the National Rifle Association are opposed to media consolidation.
Okay, well, let's talk about media consolidation, because as I was saying, I seem to get emails from you virtually every day that say, freepress.net, Kevin Martin, FCC chairman, allowed one company to own all our media, or something to that effect. I'm not quite sure what they all say. They seem to say something like that. What really is going on? I mean, in the radio world, we have Clear Channel. They are busy gnawing at a very large caucus, and they did throw a bone, a very small bone, to Progressive Radio. It did very well, so they took away our bone, and now I'm feeling like a dog without a bone. What's Clear Channel doing in radio?
Well, Clear Channel, in 1996, the Congress passed a law that was signed by then-President Bill Clinton, again, illustrating the fact that Democrats are often not any better than Republicans on media issues, although they are now. That allows Clear Channel to buy up 1,200 radio stations that they currently own. Before that, before 1996, the limit was 35. Across the country.
And so, at that time, in 96, we had independent radio in virtually every city in America.
Right. I mean, you know, here's a good way of looking at it. I have a guy in my little town, where I have a town of 30,000 people up in western Massachusetts. He's a DJ on the morning show, Clear Channel Station. I said, hey, if you hear a band and they got a great album and you want to go into your show the next morning and play a song from that nice local band, can you? The answer is no. And that homogenization, that corporatization of media has been seen across radio, but also across television, across newspapers, and as a result, our democracy is dysfunctional.
It's totally occurring across newspapers. So I remember in my hometown newspaper, I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, and we had the Tennessean, and that was an independent newspaper by a very respectable guy, John Siegenthaler, who'd run the family had run it for 100 years, and then Gannett bought it, and now it's become McNews. This was a muckraking newspaper. It took on the government, and now I'm just ready to see colorful charts.
Right, and see, this is the takeaway. Way, though, people need to understand that you have to go beyond just merely complaining about media, and you got to understand that the problem of the media is a structural one. The problem is as these media companies consolidate ownership and become larger, profit becomes the obsession, and now they consolidate again. Your elected officials let them, so it's not
this
just
96.
Natural. This is 96
under Bill Clinton,
and since then we've seen more consolidation since then by other administrations and other federal communications commissions. But the point is that as they consolidate, they do what is logical. They cut critical investigative journalism because it's expensive. They avoid criticizing politicians and government as they did in the run-up to the Iraq War because then government gets mad and does not give them, the media companies, the kind of policy breaks that are lucrative and gain them profit. They stay away from hot sort of political controversy. And I'm not talking about Britney Spears and her babies, but they stay away from political controversy.
I don't know. The Fox Propaganda Channel seems to have all kinds of controversy. They had Swift Boats. They had Jeremiah Wright. I don't think they hide from controversy.
Well, what I mean by that is if in 2003 you were Clear Channel and you were to actually say to Colin Powell after the United Nations presentation about weapons of mass destruction and say, we don't get it because we don't think your information is legit, that would be controversial.
Ah, you can't go against the president if he's a Republican.
Yeah, and he has power. So what has happened is you've got this sort of neutered media that is the direct result of the consolidation of ownership and the unquenchable thirst for profit.
Is this all about the death of the Fairness Doctrine? Is that where this comes from?
No, not really, because the Fairness Doctrine, for listeners who don't know what it is, it was a law that was taken off the books under the Reagan administration in the 80s, which forced news outlets to air both sides of any issue. The problem is the Fairness Doctrine has actually, constitutionally, it wouldn't hold up currently anymore. It's not something that we could get back on the books. We believe the solution is get media more diversely owned, get local people owning their local media, and also look to the internet. This is, you got to understand, in a few years, not just television, but television, radio, phone service, virtually all media other than a printed piece of paper or magazine will be delivered through a high-speed internet connection.
That's what we do here on the whole.
If you're listening to this show and you want to start a radio network, if the internet evolves the way we are trying to make it evolve through policy, you start your own radio network.
Here's what I'm trying to understand. Clear Channel, you said, is buying 1,200 radio stations.
They have them. They own them.
They own 1,200.
That's right.
1,200.
That's correct.
At a million a pop.
No, well, who knows? Many millions a pop for each.
So they spent $1 billion on radio stations.
I can't give you the numbers. They spent a lot of cash. Let's just say.
Where does Clear Channel get billions of dollars? That's what I want to know.
Okay, owning media with which you have a real full power broadcast license, like a TV station or a radio station, or you own the daily newspaper, it's extremely lucrative. You make a ton of money. And not only that, so they...
On what, advertising?
Yeah, advertising. They make a... media
but
is
they're telling us terrestrial radio is failing. They're not making money.
No, that's absolutely untrue. And further, when companies like Clear Channel get deregulated by the government and allowed to buy 1,200 radio stations, guess what happens? It drives the prices up of all available radio stations.
Well, they have a monopoly, that's why.
Well, but they have serious cash to be able to go in. And then let's say that Mark Levine wants to buy a station and Clear Channel wants to buy a station. Let's guess who's going to outbid who.
No, it's interesting, though, because Clear Channel, as I said, did throw us that tiny bone from the carcass of the devoured media. I was on KLSD in San Diego. I was the top-ranked talk show host in San Diego until they let KLSD die. but, progressive media in a conservative town beat out Rush Limbaugh and everything else. And now Clear Channel no longer owns progressive media. They gave it a try for a year and a half. They said it didn't work. Even though the ratings were better, than the conservatives.
Could it be because the call letters were LSD?
Well, you know, it's an old station. I can't blame that.
Yeah.
But is there a systemic reason why talk radio is so conservative?
Yes, there is. We did a study with the Center for American Progress just last year, which shows that with consolidated radio properties, so radio stations that are owned by giant companies, 9 out of 10 run overwhelmingly conservative material. Now, here, there's a couple reasons for that. Number one is very obvious. If you're a major corporation, your sensibilities, your political views are going to be much more skewed to the right because right-wingers believe in no regulation at all, make a lot of money, don't get taxed, and be greedy. And that's really what the extreme right, not moderate conservatives, but the extreme right is all about.
Right.
The progressives are the opposite. I mean, the progressives believe in economic growth, but they also believe in reasonable regulations that
so
actually...
So we're a threat to big media, basically.
Progressives are a threat to major corporations that want to do whatever it takes to make more money. There's many, many examples, countless examples, of good corporations who actually are not rapaciously greedy, who actually practice good business and give back to the community and support progressive policies and progressive politicians.
Well, let me ask you this, because we've had hundreds of years of independent newspapers. There was a time when you're talking about, well, people could do it on the internet. Well, there was a time when people literally had printing presses, right? You know, they would print out leaflets. You know, I think of Tom Paine and Common Sense. This is a very, very old American tradition. All the way up through independent progressive movements and unions and newspapers. And where's it all going? Why now? I mean, okay, they're buying up radio stations, but it's not just that. It's TV, as you said. It's newspapers. As I said, my hometown newspaper, the Nashville Tennessean, bought up by Gannett, and now they have McNews.
Let me give you a little quick history.
Yeah.
2003, the Bush administration, then Federal Communications Chairman Michael Powell, son of...
Colin Powell,
Secretary of State, tried to lift media ownership limits on a ton of stuff, and he got major pushback. 3 million people said no, right wing, left wing, and the courts eventually threw it back. Then, last year, Federal Communications Commissioner and Chairman Kevin Martin pushed another raft of rule changes that actually were a lot less bad, but they essentially allowed a newspaper owner of a daily newspaper to own radio and TV stations.
Right.
He got it through. He got it through on December 18th of 2007.
When you say got it through.
He got it passed through the Federal Communications Commission. It's a five-member board. He passed it. It's on the law books. It is real. You can now own a major daily newspaper and a TV or radio station.
Congress can overturn that.
They can overturn it, but they have not done so
yet.
Well,
no, because we got a Bush as president. And
but there has been what's called a resolution of disapproval, which is the same thing, a motion to overturn it, introduced in both the Senate and the House in the past 4 weeks. And all eyes are on that, because the idea is to at least try to pass those through the Congress and force the president to veto it, which, of course, he would, because the president really doesn't care at all about the public interest. That's
well,
clear.
Of course he'd veto it.
Yeah.
But I guess my question to you is this. We've had independent media in the United States of America that's been making us great for, colonial times.
Last time I checked, things were pretty messy.
Well, we're getting less great.
Yeah.
But
why
now? Why can Bush do things that, Reagan, okay, he abolished the Fairness Doctrine, but is this the worst period of media consolidation in American history?
Oh, yeah. The last couple decades have been the worst period ever. And
why are they getting away with it now? I'm sure John Adams, I can go back to the XYZ affair. I assure you, John Adams, with the Sedition Act, wanted to control the media, and he failed.
It's called corruption and money in politics.
We've always had corruption and money in politics.
It's so bad. Well, we have, although it's so bad now that even in this political climate, where the Bush administration is the Titanic and the rats are fleeing, you still have a situation where you cannot get a veto-proof vote on these resolutions of disapproval around this media ownership issue.
Do you think Americans don't get it?
I think Americans don't hear about it enough. Because
the media is consolidated.
You also have to understand, the Pew Research just came out with a recent study which reinforces everything we've seen for the last decade. The primary source of news and information is television. The second area that's rising in use is the internet. TV, radio and newspaper going down.
Right.
go turn on a TV and see if any of the issues we're talking about right now are ever discussed.
They'll talk about Britney Spears. They'll talk about Lindsay Lohan. They'll talk about all the important issues of the day.
Well, and don't forget the horse race analysis of the election.
Right.
Not where the politicians stand on any issue.
Issues are so boring.
Right, no.
It's much more exciting to talk about what percentage of white women over 65 voted for Hillary in South Carolina's rural provinces.
Right, and we all get sucked into it, too, because it becomes the norm. Like, so, for example, you mentioned at the beginning of the show, Obama delivers a humdinger speech today.
A powerful one.
A powerful speech. And all the conversations are going to be on television news, which is where everyone's watching, is going to be how is it going to play with 40-year-old soccer moms in Tennessee, where you're from?
Right.
You know, that's going to be the news.
Rather than actually playing the speech so that people can hear it.
Right.
Let me ask you about net neutrality, because it's something that I think, if you understand it, you're concerned, the sky is falling, you're very nervous, and you're running around screaming, help, help, help. And the 98% that don't understand it say, who is this crazy man running around screaming? Explain to our listeners, what is net neutrality and why is it so important?
It's very simple. Net neutrality is a law that has always existed that says that nobody, including the owners of the internet pipes that go into your house, the cable or phone companies, cannot block or slow down internet traffic, information coming to you on the web based on who's sending it.
Nobody can block it.
Right. So net neutrality says you can't do that, AT&T, Comcast, Verizon, and Time Warner.
So just to be clear, AT&T is saying, hey, I gave you your internet. You pay me $9.95 a month. I gave you your internet. And that means that if you want to look at a competitor like Verizon, I'm not going to let you. Or if you want to find out where AT&T, I don't know, I'm making this up, stole millions of dollars from peasants in Thailand, we're not going to allow you to have that content because, hey, we're providing you the media. It would be kind of like the owners of your electricity saying, we're not going to give you television that hurts the electric company.
And another example is if you guys, with your show, don't pay AT&T an extra amount of money every month.
Hush money.
To make sure that your show moves quickly through AT&T's pipes.
We'll slow them down.
You get the slow road.
Right, right.
That's why this is so important.
So that we talk like this.
Yes, and people switch the channel to something.
Maybe they're messing us up right now. I don't know. We've had two downs.
Yeah,
no, I don't
this
think
is
so.
All AT&T.
Right.
Because I'm the guest.
Right.
No, and that's really why this matters so much, because all internet, again, like I said before, TV, radio, phone, it's all moving to the internet. It's no longer going to be broadcast the way it currently is. So these issues are the most important issues facing our country, along with, I think, money and politics. Because if we cannot get the information to make intelligent political decisions, who do we pull the lever for? We're not going to be able to have a viable democracy.
But we already have the Fox Propaganda Channel, right? We already have Roger Ailes, who admittedly, Republican Party operative, doesn't deny that he is trying to develop a station to help his party. And if that's not, I mean, it's like going around screaming, hey, the emperor has no clothes, the emperor has no clothes, and people are like, oh, yeah, I think Fox News is kind of right-wing. What do the American people, what are the people listening to the horn, what can they do to actually change this terrible direction we're going?
Number one, you have to go to stopbigmedia.com.
Absolutely.
That's our coalition website where people can sign up. You can become an e-activist. You can help make calls, sign petitions, forward petitions and letters to important legislators at important moments, to your friends.
It's still about lobbying Congress.
It's about lobbying Congress, and it's about people getting involved. You know, hey, when anything major good has happened in this country, like, for example, in the 70s, when there was actually positive environmental legislation passed through the Congress and signed by President Nixon, it was because there was
Nixon was a liberal, don't you know?
Yeah, there was these days he would be.
I know.
This was because of public pressure. The same thing goes for civil rights. I mean, all the great changes that have happened in our country has been because enough people stood up and said, I'm sick and tired of it, and I'm not going to take this anymore. And that's what we need to see with media, because I'll tell you, we are in an Orwellian haze. People don't know what the heck is going on in the world or in this country. We are being led around by the nose by a bunch of corporate interests and the hard right media, and it's got to stop, and now's the time.
All right, you heard it. Stopbigmedia.com. Josh Silver, hey, thanks for coming here on The Inside Scoop.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. Well, you heard him, folks. I mean, it's the kind of thing that we talk about here all the time. You know, I've done it all. I've done terrestrial radio. I've done television. I've done internet radio. And they're around us. I feel like the wagons have circled, and we're being surrounded, and they're coming after us. And what does that mean? It means that the corporations understand that they are the power. And, well, you know what? I see a couple people coming here. Hey, you want to talk with me? Gary? No, you're going somewhere else. No, it's someone talking about fair elections, because, you know, that's something that I'm always talking about. But that's the way it is here at the Take Back America Convention. It could be anybody just to grab them. Look, I understand that Obama gave a very powerful speech. Well, I may just do that. Tell you what, let's take a break. Let's give a chance for callers to call in if you want to. 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. The dreadful landmark is upon us. Bush's Iraq War, now 5 years old. And the costs of this war have been astronomical, no matter what calculator you use. On the most important human side, the results have been hideous. We've lost 4,000 soldiers, and 30,000 more have been wounded, many of them grievously. Iraqi civilians have suffered enormously, with hundreds of thousands killed and millions turned into refugees. Then there's the financial cost. We're wasting $3 billion a week on this fiasco. And when all is said and done, we'll have spent upwards of $2 trillion, enough to pay for universal health care for every American for 12 years. And the kicker is the war hasn't made us any safer. It's made us more imperiled. Serving as a recruiting call for Al-Qaeda and a training ground using live ammunition and live targets, our soldiers. Enough already. This is a disaster times five. We cannot allow it to reach a sixth. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Tune in to Foxed Up this Thursday, midnight Eastern, for part two of Lenin on Lenin, Blame It on Bermuda, where we'll examine the creative process and how the ideas for Double Fantasy happened.
When we made a tentative decision to make a record, I didn't have any material. Then suddenly it all came to me. All the songs that are on Double Fantasy all came within a period of 3 weeks. In Bermuda, after 5 years of nothing.
So be there this Thursday, midnight Eastern, on Foxed Up, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
I just have to let it go.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine reporting live from the Take Back America Conference. Sitting across from me is Rob Call. He is with OpEdNews.com. Rob Call and I go pretty far back. When did OpEd News begin?
Right before the start of the Iraq War.
That's really what brought it OpEd News there. What was the Iraq War? Is that how you started? I mean, what's your history before OpEd News?
Before OpEd News?
Yeah.
I've been a writer, writing for national magazines, and I ran conferences up until last year on the art, science, and application of story.
So it was the Iraq War that really galvanized you, I guess.
Between the appointment of Bush as president in 2002.
Yeah, see, that's the one that got me into this business.
And, you know, but for years I also have had a business related to biofeedback, which is about teaching individuals how to empower themselves and raise their consciousness.
So
one person at a time.
So OpEd News began with your view that the media wasn't covering, I guess, the other side of the story.
OpEd News began with me being annoyed, PO'd.
I got to Washington.
I just started writing about it, and I submitted it to some progressive sites, and the first one was accepted, then the next 10 were ignored. And I was used to writing for national media, national magazines, where they gave you the courtesy of a response.
And the progressive media wasn't.
Nothing, not a single response.
There wasn't much progressive media then. I mean, I remember because I started on the air in 03, And, I mean, who was around then? You had NPR, I guess?
Well, there was Buzz Flash and Common Dreams and Aldernet
Out. Okay, you're talking about the website.
Yeah, yeah.
Because even most of them, frankly, are brand new.
The print was Nation and Mother Jones.
Right. Now, they've been around a long time.
Yeah.
So what does Op-Ed News offer? What's it all about?
Well, Op-Ed News, some people call it the people's news because you don't have to be in somebody's platinum Rolodex to write for us. You can come up with some good ideas, write well, then we're happy to have you. We do some things differently, too. We're a nonprofit, and we've got inside pages on for every county and every state in the United States, every province in Canada, every country in
every
the world.
Every county in the United States?
Every county. And so
there's some tiny counties in this United States.
Our vision is to empower local alternative media. So the funny thing is we get stuff out of Bangladesh or Nepal where a writer is talking about recent efforts in fighting for democracy, and it'll go on the Nepal page or the Bangladesh page. That's probably not something we want to put on the front page, though. We have a regular correspondent from Waziristan in Pakistan on the mountain regions where Osama bin Laden is. And
if he catches him, will you let us know? Because I understand he's about 6'6". He's got a long beard and needs a dialysis machine. So just tell the guy Waziristan to be on the lookout, will you?
But we get an interesting advance notice about what's going on there and stories about how the Taliban are coming back and how the local terrorists are dealing with the Pakistani government. And
so what happens if a Bush-Cheneyite wants to write at Op-Ed News? I mean, how do you keep it ideologically, let's just say, compatible with your own view?
Well, you know, we're nonprofits, so we have to be nonpartisan. Now, the way I envision that is we'll accept content from any progressive. So if somebody's supporting Ralph Nader or Cynthia McKinney...
What about Don Rumsfeld?
If Don Rumsfeld wanted to write for us...
No, I mean someone supporting Don Rumsfeld. I mean, how do you stay nonprofit?
Our rule is that things have to be civil. You know, if somebody supports Don Rumsfeld, he can't write an article about stupid liberals. But if he writes an intelligent article and he's willing to be there to respond to the comments, which he's going to get...
Oh, yeah.
Then he'll find new apertures in his anatomy from our commenters.
Okay, so you really are open then to anyone.
You know, I don't know of any other site that is as open as ours. It's a high traffic site. We cover the Middle East, and it's really hard.
I'm sure it is.
It's a very tough issue, and most liberal sites either block it out altogether. Some of them have people supporting the Palestinians. We allow all sides. And it can get very fiery.
People get very angry and very nasty when you talk about the
military. I've been told in serial emails, literally, there was one day I got two emails in a row. One told me I was a Zionist, and the next called me an anti-Semite.
Wow. And it's hard to be both. Let me tell you, it's really hard to be both. But why are they blaming you? You're not writing these articles.
Well, because I'm putting the stuff on the website. I'm allowing it to be put up there.
Have you rejected some things?
Yeah, well, we have 35 volunteer editors, and the way we work is we welcome anybody to submit an article. They basically sign up, submit the article to our content management system. It goes into a queue, and we generally get between 30 and 80 articles a day.
Wow.
And we're up to 35 volunteer editors who evaluate the articles, accept them, send them back for improvement or modification.
And what you're looking for is just interesting news and commentary, I guess.
Yeah, intelligent analysis, reporting. And
so how is it that something that you began in 01, I guess, or 2?
03.
03, so it's been 5 years. I mean, 30, 80 articles a day, that's pretty good. How did you get out there? How did people find out about Op-Ed?
It's more than that. We probably average altogether closer to 50 a day published. And then in addition to that, we do links, like the Drudge Report does links.
Right.
A lot of people kind of think of us as the Drudge Report for liberals because we do link aggregation.
So what's the secret for people who are building a grassroots movement? How did Op-Ed News go from your personal being PO'd, as you put it, to actually now you get 50 articles a day? What's the secret?
Well, I think the biggest secret to the success is trusting other people. Handing the decision-making and putting the choices that are made into other people's hands and getting them involved in the process.
So your 35 volunteer editors, they're not paid?
They're not paid, no.
They're just people who believe in the same cause you believe in?
Yes. And some of them specialize. Like we've got one volunteer editor, Joan Brunwasser, who is amazing what she's done with voting integrity. And she's recruited probably 50 or 80 writers of her own who all post with us now. We probably have more articles on voting integrity than any other site. Maybe.
And that may be why I keep thinking of you with Bush v. Gore, because that's been my big issue really ever since I came to Washington, is protecting the right to vote. Now, there was a bit of a controversy on your site when a lot of supporters of Ron Paul put a lot of ads on your, a lot of articles on your site. What happened with that?
Well, you know, I literally, and I really had to back off from it, because I had it, personally, I felt he was the best Republican candidate.
Okay.
So I posted an article saying he's the best Republican candidate.
Okay.
And some of my writers, the members of the community, because I think of it as a community.
Mm-hmm.
They were annoyed. They say, hey, look at this guy. Look where he stands on these other issues where he's terrible.
Right.
And they said, but look, if you look at all these other guys, he's better than all of them.
Right. So listen, Ron Paul, I got to tell you, as I watched him when I heard him in the Republican debates talk about Iraq and everything, I mean, he was great. He was saying all the things I'd want to say.
He said
and he was taking them down. Now, I disagree with Ron Paul on a lot of issues, as I'm sure you do too. I mean, he's pro-life, for example. He's against a woman's right to choose. And actually, if you look at his history, as I'm sure you probably have been made aware of, or you were aware of, with the New Republic's done some terrific articles on Ron Paul's past, he does come out of a certain anti-government, somewhat racist, somewhat anti-Semitic extreme. It's kind of the helicopter people, if you know what I mean. They're the black helicopter people of Idaho. They were feared seeing black helicopters, sort of the same. So while Ron Paul says some very good things, he's also got a little craziness back there.
Absolutely.
I don't think he denies any of that.
You know, it's funny because I mentioned him today because he said some of the same kind of things that Reverend Wright said.
That's right. He's actually very similar, I think, to Reverend Wright in many ways. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Mark just jumped up and his eyes lit up.
Well, no, because I think you made a real connection there. I think you're absolutely right. To me, I've always felt there's a connection between sort of the far left and the far right, because they both of them, I think, instead of seeing America's problems and wanting to change them, which I think is what a good liberal does, they see America's problems and give up and talk about really destroying America, which is not something I want to do. But you know, when I hear Jeremiah Wright say "Goddamn America," and I hear Ron Paul's people talk about the helicopters, I see a similarity. I mean, what do you see?
No, there's a lot of people have a lot of reasons to be angry with America.
Absolutely, and I don't dispute that.
America has real problems that need to be fixed.
Right.
And, you know, it's just like, you know, with Israel, I tend to be someone who criticizes Israeli policy and behavior, but I don't hate Israel. It's just like they've got leaders who are kind of like Bush.
Well, it depends.
And
depends
you can't
which leader.
Blame,
I actually think Olmert is pretty much of a moderate compared to some of the past Israeli leaders. To me, the distinction on Israel has always been the difference between criticizing Israeli policy, which is perfectly fair and just, and I criticize America all the time, and criticizing Israel's right to be, to exist, to say that, you know, this place shouldn't be there and all the people should.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's the distinction. I guess I make it in America, too. There's a big distinction between saying, as I say, America has done this wrong and this wrong and this wrong, and we need to change this and we need to change that, which I say all the time, and Jeremiah Wright, who in my view goes too far and says, "Goddamn America." I would never say that, because to me there's a distinction between saying we've done many bad things, we need to fix America, and that one extra step, and actually condemning us all.
You know, back in the 60s, we used to spell America with a K.
Right. I wouldn't go that far. You're farther along, I guess, than I am. I don't know.
I mean, that's the America that he's talking about, the one where people get beat up by police.
I mean, you don't have to tell me about slavery and racism and Jim Crow and the racism that still exists today. I guess it's a difference. It's glass half empty, glass half full. One of the things I like about Barack Obama, and I'm like the only one who hasn't seen his speech yet today, and I'm going to go home, I'm going to see it, I hear it was phenomenal.
It was amazing.
But it seems to me that he is someone who, without in any way diminishing the awful things America has done throughout the ages, without in any way denying or diminishing, which I think is wrong to do, he's someone who helps us rise above it and recognize that recognizing our past does not at all prevent us from changing it and giving us the hope that is America.
You sure you didn't hear his speech?
No, I'm just, I haven't heard it.
I wrote those words down.
Really? Okay, well, he and I are on the same page. There's a reason why I've endorsed the guy. But to me, that's a very important distinction. You have some of them right there?
Okay. I do.
Tell me,
he said, let us find the common stake we have in one another and get our politics to find that common stake as well.
Yeah. No, and that's so vitally important. And the answer is, it's not about denying the facts. See, to me, conservatives simply deny the facts. They deny that America has done wrong. They deny our ugly, racist past or that we killed all the Native Americans or any of that. I don't deny any of it. But then I see people on the left who not only take our past, but internalize it to think that everything about America is wrong, everything we do is wrong.
Here's the line. We are still irrevocably bound to a tragic past.
Yeah, we are.
What we have that, and then I can't read my handwriting, but we can change. That is the genius of America.
And it is, because there's a lot of good in America, too. And I think some people on the far left don't see that, that there is an American dream, and there is a place for a guy with an African name from a one-parent family who could become our next president of the United States. I always want to say the glass is half full and half empty. I never want to give up on the hope that is America, and I see that of the people that are out there in the streets marching for Obama. We haven't given up on our country yet. So it's funny. When I'm arguing with conservatives, I'm constantly saying, hey, recognize this ugly past. And when I'm arguing with people to my left, I'm saying, hey, recognize America has a lot of good. And the answer is it's both true.
Well, you know, part of what I've done in my past is I've run conferences on positive psychology. And that's all about seeing the part of the glass that's full.
Right, right. There's some good
things
in America.
All the good that can be done.
Right.
You know, now, Op-Ed News is further left than some of the other sites. It's not, I don't know that I'd call it far left, although, you know, with 600,000 unique visitors a month, we have a range that's pretty wide. I mean, we have moderates, we have conservatives, we have subscribers who are regular readers who are conservatives, and we have people who are anarchists out there, too. It's all
kinds.
Yeah,
they bug me. The anarchists bug me.
Well,
it's like you throw up your hands and you say, it's giving up.
And then we have people who are just see America as, you know, in the toilet. And then it's sad, you know.
I don't think you can fix the toilet. Maybe you can. I got to call a plumber. You know what I mean?
I'm firmly in believing when we have incumbents who suck.
Right. Okay.
In Flushing.
You know,
regularly.
Look, we have the worst president in American history.
Yes.
And yet, I look back. And again, I look back to slavery, look back to the Civil War, where, you know, more Americans died than far more than Iraq, brother upon brother, and we got through that too. And so I don't want in any way deny the real problems that are out there, and I want to go out there with my eyes open, but at the same time, I do think there is a tendency among some people to just give up. And that bugs me, too.
You know, this morning there was a talk. It was Jesse Jackson and Taylor Branch and I can't think of his other name. But they were talking about the legacy of 40 years later of Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
And they
he never gave up.
But he had his dark days.
Of course he did, because
he talked about a time when he had 3-day migraine.
I'm sure.
And how he just preached his way out of it.
I'm sure.
And people, even the most energetic activists, have their dark nights of the soul.
Hey, I have them myself. I'm not going to deny it. Let me tell you, doing what I try to do right here on the Head On Radio Network, trying to get a progressive voice out there, beating my head against the wall. Rob, I was last week at a radio and records convention, okay? I was in the heart of the demon. I was there surrounded by hundreds of right-wing conservative talk show hosts and media ownership and all the people around there that so want to destroy the progressive movement. I'm a masochist. What can I say? Despite all that, I don't know. Maybe it's. I still think that we can succeed. You have an idea. You've done very well with Op-Ed News. I'm still trying to learn your secret. How it is that now you have 600,000 hits a day?
No, 40 million hits. 600,000 unique visitors.
600,000 unique visitors a day, a year,
a month.
A month. How do you? What do you attribute that to?
Google News says that it picks up news from 4,500 media sites, New York Times, Asahi Shimbun, etc. We're one of them. So a lot of the people who find us through Google News.
Interesting. Now, how did Google News pick you up?
I asked them to.
Really?
Back almost 5 years ago, after I was up and running 6 months. They're looking for sites that are legitimate news sites with original content.
You just email Google News and say, hey, check this out?
I think I had to do it a couple times, and I had to kind of talk to email them through what we did and how we worked. And
interesting. So there's a little secret.
So we publish 1,500 original articles a month, and that makes us a pretty serious original content source.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
And the other thing is we've custom designed the website. Part of my background is software design. And I think our site's very sticky. People come to it, and they tend to look at more pages on one visit than they do on other sites. And we've really integrated the site so that, you know, you go to some sites, and you read an author, and you like what he's written, and you can't find any of his other stuff.
Right, so you can just click on the author.
You click on the author, and you can look at all the comments, all the articles, all the diaries that he's done. And we just added a calendar so that if you pick an event that you want to list that you're going to, you can let people see it or not, as well even. So I think part of it is our website, too. We've got a really cool directory system with tag clouds that make it easy to see what's going on, too.
Well, Rob, I got to tell you, I really value what you do, and I appreciate the good hard fight that you fight, and I want to thank you for coming here on the Inside Scoop.
It's a pleasure, and I'm proud to see what you've done, too, Mark.
Well, I appreciate that. Well, we'll have to talk more about getting some horn content on Op-Ed News.
All right. Get horn in.
Definitely. Thanks again for coming here on the program.
Thank you.
Well, we've got a few more minutes. If you want to call in and talk, it's 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Did you see the Obama speech? I'll tell you, I've been waiting with bated breath. I can't wait, I have to admit, to go home. And I don't know where I'm going to find it. I assume C-SPAN or CNN. I got to see the whole thing. I don't do snippets. I don't do things like that. Probably, I'll bet by now, I can find it on the Internet. But I've been thinking. So here you are. You're going to hear the pre-speech speech, even though some of you have already heard the speech. So you can tell me whether I'm predicting right. But I predict, even though it's, like I said, it's already happened, that this is the most important speech of Barack Obama's career. This is a man who's got to hit the hardest knuckleball you've ever heard. He's got to distance himself from Jeremiah Wright at the same time as he doesn't distance himself from the black church. He has to admit all the bad things America has done without in any way taking away from his optimism. He has to reach out to African Americans who fear that he's dissing them at the same time as he doesn't distance himself from white voters. He has to let America know that, yeah, he's on our side, he wishes America well, at the same time as he recognizes America's problems. He has got the most difficult task on his head. Now, what I hear from everyone who's heard the speech is he hit that ball out of the park, that he actually managed to do all those things in one speech. It's an amazing thing, but what can I say? He's one of the most amazing orators of our time. If anyone can do this, I think Barack Obama can. I'm not sure anyone can do this, so that's why I'm looking forward to seeing the speech. I'll tell you this. I announced on this show 6 months ago, maybe longer, that Jeremiah Wright was going to become a household name. That it wasn't, I mean, on the horn we knew about it early, but I announced that he was the swift boat. He was the one that every single American would know his name and would consider him evil. And it's happened, frankly, sooner than I expected. I thought the Republicans might hold their fire a bit until September or October. I'm glad it's happened now. I'm glad he's addressing this now. I think that it's something that he had to be addressed. There's no question. I mean, he is the pastor of the church that Barack Obama has been to for 20 years. He did marry Barack and Michelle Obama. And, of course, the audacity of hope comes from Jeremiah Wright. So I knew he'd have to address this eventually. I'm glad it's happened now, even though it's hurting Barack Obama a bit, because I feel like better now than an October surprise. And if Barack Obama can't handle it, if he can't do a speech that hits it out of the park, one that appeals to white and black, to really left and right, or at least those on the right that are still willing to have a bit of an open mind, then maybe he shouldn't be our nominee. But I'm told by everyone who's heard the speech that he did it, that he actually managed to deliver that kind of speech. So I'm very much looking forward to it. And then on Thursday, I'm going to devote my entire show to the speech. We may play some of it. But I want to talk about Obama and Jeremiah Wright. You know, it's interesting. Many of you know I was the token white guy on Black Talk Radio for about a year on XM. And I co-hosted a show with Mark Thompson. I couldn't play most of those shows right here on the horn. They wouldn't let me. I would have loved to. But it was very interesting being the token white guy, walking into a station where I was clearly the minority. And, you know, everyone on air is African-American except me, and pretty much everyone in the room is. And it was interesting because I was giving the minority perspective. And I've been in that situation before. I mean, just being a Jewish guy in America, being a gay guy in America, I'm used to being in a minority. But what I guess I'm not used to is being part of the majority that is in the minority, if you know what I mean. It's kind of like those of you know when you're a man in a room and it's all women, and I don't mean one or two, but 30. You stand out. I'll tell you, I enjoyed the experience a lot, and I highly recommend it for those of you who haven't been a minority to go and do that and to really listen to people. When you're with people of another culture, there are all kinds of things. There's cadences, the way people talk, the way people... And then part of it, frankly, is just recognizing the humanity that is in us all. And that's the thing I think that Obama rises above. He is the one candidate that I've seen that truly does bring people together of every walk of life. And that's an amazing thing. And it's something, frankly, that many of our politicians are not able to do. They reach out to only one constituency. And that's why the speech is so important, because here was a chance for him to reach out to both blacks and whites, to reach out to those who understand that America is not perfect, but recognize that there's still some hope in all of us. After all, hope is what he's all about. And like I said, I'm totally hit it out of the park. So I look forward to seeing that. You're going to hear from me talking about that on Thursday. Tomorrow we're going to do something a little bit different. I'm going to tell you about my gambling problem and the fact that the Republicans want to ban it. It's ridiculous. You'll hear all about it tomorrow on the Inside Scoop. But for now, this is Mark Levine signing off.